ADHD is so prevalent in the criminal world? Why is it that you think?
That's definitely a good question. I think
Dr. Alex Kappei is a consultant psychiatrist
with over 15 years' experience
and now deals with diagnosing prisoners who have ADHD.
Do you see an overlap with ADHD and personality disorders such as BPD, sociopathy, or psychopathy?
Yes, we know that 70% of the people with ADHD have got some sort of comorbidities of some kind. But we need to also distinguish if they are comorbidities or if they've simply been misdiagnosed.
Why do you think so many ADHD women were missed for so long? What three traits of ADHD do you think are most responsible for breaking the law?
The impulsivity also, which we have seen, is very much related. And then,
is there a way to redirect those negative traits and turn them into positives? I'm sure you've heard this a million times on other podcasts, but it really does help if you follow the show or subscribe on YouTube, because it really helps me get bigger and better guests. And if you subscribe, I'll return the favour by promising that I'll never let this podcast be sponsored by Huel. Alex, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Why is it that you think ADHD is so prevalent in the criminal world?
There have been studies to try and investigate what the reason maybe. What we do know, and there is plenty of evidence in children in the community, you have about 4 or 5% of the population is affected by ADHD. Then in adult, you have a decrease to about 2%, 2.2-3%. But in prison, for the studies that we have seen all over the world, really, the prevalence is as high as 20-40%. So much, much higher. And it doesn't seem that ADHD itself, only ADHD, can actually justify criminality. So we need to consider the broader picture. For example, especially let's consider a woman with ADHD. Typically, there is quite often a very serious trauma in the background. And then you may have this person with a early childhood ADHD, maybe there is trauma, maybe there was not a family in the background happy to support or also to visualize the difficulties that a child was having. This may have led to problems at school, not learning, and possibly even dropping out of school. Also, what happens when you drop out of school early and without no qualification, what happens is that the regular pathway is that people often end up using drugs, possibly ending up with the wrong crowd, possibly starting with a little petty crime. And as soon as you can imagine, they end up in bigger trouble.
Shocking, isn't it? 21 in 4, so 25%. Yes. Is that 25% of inmates have ADHD? Is that the same for the female prisons as it is for the male prisons?
What we do know is that in general, the numbers are more or less similar.
If we look at the traits you mentioned that could potentially lead to criminality, so the impulsivity, the leaving school early because of ADHD, therefore getting into the wrong crowd, is there a way to redirect those negative traits and turn them into positives?
I firmly believe so. I'm glad that there is much more awareness. We are starting having so much more awareness of neurodiversity and ADHD. You have been diagnosed as an adult, I imagine. Yes, there are so many people that as children, they were not picked up. And this could be for several reasons that I can probably discuss during the discussion today. But the reality is that there was probably very little awareness, I would say all over Europe, maybe a little bit better in the US, but all over Europe. And this means that unless a child was extremely disruptive and extremely problematic to a level that they would paralyze their whole class, probably they would not be picked up because the teachers and probably parents as well, they don't know what to look for. And it was a common thing to simply label a child if he was male and naughty and hyperactive. Yes, naughty, not disciplined, probably the fault is the parents are not educating them enough. Or females are probably more often historically labeled as daydreamers, lazy. Oh, she doesn't. She doesn't do enough. She's not trying hard enough. The fact that we have more awareness and there are podcasts and information like this one, people are talking. My hope is that this is, in fact, improving the way in which we can detect problems very early. I would imagine that the best place to do so is school. So giving a child the attention and the right support at the right time, which is surely early in school, and also educating not just the child and the teachers, but also families, because also families probably will need some education on what to make of the symptoms that they can see presenting in front of their eyes. That's all very important, because also giving the parents the ability to support children the right way and in a productive way is actually very important, also to support the child to grow up with a better self-awareness, but also self-esteem.
I suppose with your work, interacting with the prisoners, you come across these people, I suppose, once it's too late.
Yeah.
Once they've offended and they've found themselves in the criminal justice system.
Yeah. Well, it can be seen as a sad reality. And I would agree, probably, there is some sadness in the realization that it's late, a crime has happened, or a path has been the kind of wrong path for some time. However, I also see I tend to focus on the positive side of things. So, for example, in prison, the prisons I've been working in, we have established very early interventions for ADHD assessments. And this means that people that have been neglected their whole life, from not only at school, at home, but also from the systems, they may be sometimes arriving to prison, maybe sadly, the first time they have had access to a care professional looking at them and trying to figure out how to improve things in their life.
Do you think all prisoners should get screened for ADHD when they enter the prison system?
Look, I didn't have a very strong opinion on this until probably a couple of years ago. But new evidence actually suggests that the prevalence of ADHD is so high in the criminal population, which makes it probably pretty straightforward to agree. Yes, I think so, because we do, for several reasons. First of all, ADHD is treatable, mostly. It's a treatable problem, differently as compared to other mental health problems that have got a worse response. And also because we want to do in prison. I don't see prison merely as a punishment. I see it also as a rehabilitation. So I would imagine that one of the main aims of going to prison is not to get back to prison. So you want people to learn something from coming to prison, taking something with them, and make sure that they're going to learn not to get back. And in this also, you need to include the support and the treatment when that's required.
Do you have any particular rehabilitation stories where a prisoner's come in, they've become aware that they're living with ADHD, and then with that new awareness, they've changed the trajectory of their outcomes?
Yeah, actually several. I am particularly fond of a story. Obviously, I cannot mention names, but I remember, for example, a female that came to prison. She didn't come with any diagnosis of anything, really. Probably occasional depression and anxiety, which was a peculiar way of being anxious and depressed anyway. Very active, extremely active. So she was always like ups and downs, working in the garden and working in doing all sorts of activities. but unable to do coursework, which is sometimes required also for the sentence. You know, it's important. Rehabilitation is also very often being able to sit down in meetings, which can last long, probation work and case manager work. So that requires some sort of ability to, you know, sit down, let other people speak, you know, all those things that were very difficult to her. But anyway, in the time that she was with us, obviously, because of her difficulties, this ADHD was considered, and she was assessed. And in fact, she did receive a full assessment of, a severe ADHD, which was a particularly still hyperactive, even if we know that. And she was around in a 45, 50s probably at the time. So we know that hyperactivity tends to diminish with age, but this was not the case with this person, or probably she was even more hyperactive as a child. But anyway, long story short, she had a very horrible, horrific upbringing, traumatic. Parents, obviously, a lot of violence, a lot of abuse. She didn't manage to be in school, or better, she was in school, but she didn't take it seriously. She was unable to focus. She'd never been able to listen, dropped out of school very, very early, ended up doing drugs extremely early, probably started at 12, 15, 13, so very, very early. But anyway, she was assessed for ADHD. She got the diagnosis. She responded very well to medications. And she actually made a massive improvement in so many aspects of her life, including being able to engage with probation, with the courses, with all the sentence work, but also with her peers. Mm. So in reality, something that was not... But it was not probably the major problem before we started realizing was her emotional instability and interpersonal problems. But as soon as she was on treatment, there was a massive improvement also in her ability to maintain relationships and friends and be a little bit more moderate in the way she interacts with others without cutting and removing people like straight away from her radar. And anyway, she, within a year, she was able actually to be released to a supported accommodation with a job already offered, which is obviously the best outcome that you can expect. Already being able to maintain a job and continue with that.
Mm. It's a strong argument, like to show how effective awareness and diagnosis might be. I'm thinking for someone like that, and just generally, for an ADHD mind, it must be almost literal hell to be behind bars because you're hyperactive, you're stuck in a cell, that might breed resentment, anger, maybe even more crime. Is that something you've encountered?
You are absolutely right in terms of research and statistics. Actually, yes, it is... It does happen a lot that people with ADHD tend to have more incidents whilst in custody. But probably you will want to know a little bit more about how prison is inside. And I will tell you my experience of what happens. So this is obviously only my experience and not based on research or data on many prisoners. I think that there are two categories of patients. So with ADHD, I mean, obviously there is this problem that basically being in prison is like being all in the same house. You don't have privacy. You open your door of your cell and you are surrounded by other people. Sometimes it's annoying because they shout, they call you. You may not want interaction and then you have to go and collect your food together with others. So there are so many things that are absolutely like a hell for the mind of a person that with neurodiversity and ADHD. However, it's also true that prison can be very beneficial for some of these people with ADHD, and I've seen massive improvements in prison for some of them. Number one is substance misuse. Well, I'm not saying that you cannot find substances in prison. In fact, that's not what I'm saying at all. But prison offers the possibility to have the support available right there without all the problems that may be there in the community. So in reality, prisoners are often on rehabilitation programs, and they have a structure. So the structure there is hated and loved by people with ADHD. Actually, that's imposed in there. So you have to wake up at a certain time. Mm. I mean, don't get me wrong. You can also not get up and not do anything. You can potentially not do anything. But in reality, that's even more, it's a little bit more miserable than just engaging with the process. So most of the prisoners will have a job, and you can have active jobs. So my very hyperactive patients with ADHD would all work in the garden, would all be up from early morning until the evening and get super tired. They can all go to the gym, and some of them may be gym instructors and walk up and down. Others enjoy the personal relationships with others, interactions, and they may be peer mentors, for example. So there are many aspects of the prison life that can be negative, but many others actually are very positive. Mm-hmm. And we have seen a massive improvement in some people with ADHD.
Do you think there's some prisoners who might slip through the cracks in that sense that they fail to integrate in the ways you've just suggested? And for that neurodiverse person who has a very overactive mind, being in that environment might be inhumane?
Yes, it could be. Yeah, that could be the case. That is obviously prison is an imposed reality, and it's not necessarily what the person would. Probably, surely, is not what the person would choose to do. The environment in prison can be challenging because of the common space, because of the overstimulation at times, the voices of other people. Which is shouts sometimes, but also having to integrate and cooperate.
What three traits of ADHD do you think are most responsible for somebody breaking the law?
I would say probably. The impulsivity is surely a big one. Also, well, obviously, one of the main issues that can drive someone to break the laws is often connected to substance misuse, which we have seen is very much related. That's not really a trait, but it's very much related to ADHD. And then they probably... the cognitive functioning, which may be a little bit deficient in people with ADHD, especially when it's severe, could be also that they're non-planning, not seeing the consequences.
Mm. Is there a particular crime that you see people committing when they have ADHD?
Especially in males, I think. I guess it's probably assault, which is probably related to impulsivity often. Also drug-related offences often. I guess also driving offences are pretty frequent, but not necessarily they are indictable or they are going to lead to a prison sentence. But still, if you were considering the crimes themselves, I guess that also the speeding is probably extremely frequent and it can go wrong. Driving under the effect of substances, they are possibly things that can happen, yeah.
And women with ADHD, are they committing similar crimes to the men with ADHD?
Women are such a different chapter because in reality, women are, if you consider the UK, women are only 5% of the UK prison population. So it's a very minimal number. And what we know in terms of the offences of women's offences are they are not violent. If you take the percentage of offences, 95% of assaults or serious assaults are actually by men. The vast majority of sexual offences have been done by men. Women tend to commit more less violent offences normally,
such as
like could be burglary, for example, which is not necessarily, which is not violent. Mm. It could be like fraud.
Do you see an overlap with ADHD and personality disorders such as BPD, sociopathy or psychopathy?
Yes. Actually, yes, we know that, first of all people with ADHD have much more comorbidity. And when we say in psychiatry, we say comorbidity, we mean the co-presence of another diagnosis. So this happens much more people with ADHD. In fact, probably 70% of the people with ADHD have got some sort of comorbidities of some kind. So it's very frequent. But yes, for some of these comorbidities, sometimes we need to also distinguish if they are comorbidities or if they've simply been misdiagnosed. So, for example, this is the case of women that until 10, 15 years ago, they were. It is very frequent to misdiagnose women as suffering with emotionally unstable or borderline personality disorder, which is the same disorder, which is a personality disorder, more difficult to treat. Statistically, responds much less to medications. And in fact, medications are not the first-line treatment to treat emotionally unstable personality disorder. And in fact, psychological therapies are. But because of the mood instabilities that characterize personality disorders, and particularly borderline personality disorder, often females with ADHD have been labeled as emotionally unstable, but I would say mislabeled. I have reassessed many women that have come to prison, and I could not see at all traits of emotionally unstable personality disorders. So whilst on one side I can say, yes, there is a comorbidity and there is a lot, and we do know that there is a lot of comorbidity with anxiety, depression, personality disorders, autism, sometimes we also need to consider that some people may have been misdiagnosed in the past.
Mm. Why do you think so many ADHD women were missed for so long?
Because they are silent, because they were not that loud as children, isn't it? That's the thing. You don't miss a child that is hyperactive and a difficult to manage. From a school teacher point of view, difficult to manage, probably impossible to manage. You don't miss that one because simply it troubles the whole system. It just stops you from teaching. It stops the whole, it annoys you, annoys the other children, probably is disruptive, and then other children follow. So it becomes impossible as for a teacher in primary school to actually continue doing their job. But females, ADHD is more often, not always, but more often, rather than hyperactive, is inattentive. So you have the classical daydreamer, distracted, not very precise, not very good in maths, probably, or spelling sometimes, and forgetful, or also in general, like in a little bit of a bubble, isn't it? And they don't create problems. They are silent. They're not necessarily. They may be even shy and even if they have difficulties being attentive, they are not disruptive. They not necessarily are making a big deal of this.
Mm.
And also, there is another thing. I think that there is also a cultural aspect in which, in reality, I think. Females are in many cultures actually have been are more penalized for expressing, for example, difficulties. So it's easier to label a girl as a girl that is, for example, ups and downs with the moods as that's the hormones or inattentive and not able to do maths. Oh, she's not very clever. Or, just labeling rather than actually considering a real addressing a real problem.
Was it the injustice that women are faced that made you want to specialize in ADHD?
I think that's a part of it. Also, I like the fact that there is so much that can be improved with not so much. I mean, you can really make little adjustments to improve a lot. ADHD is a really very treatable condition, and one of the things that probably I am that I would like to see more, especially in the NHS, because at the moment in the NHS, it's most of the services are offering medications, like a pharmacological treatment. But in reality, we also know that there are more treatments, and we do know that sometimes you have to address more. So even like with coaching for ADHD, which is simply trying to be to improve your awareness of a structure, routine, and what to do to have this in place, I like the fact that you can work with some simple concepts and actually make a difference. And I feel that we are far behind in what we should, where to the level where we should be. Mm. And I would be part of this improvement, driving the improvement.
Is there anything particular that you find interesting about the criminal mind that's different from the mind of someone who abides by the law?
The biology of the lack of empathy, which is basically particularly prevalent in psychopathy. So that's something that, and also in the trying and imagining how it is to live that way. And yes, I guess it's an attractive point for many researchers that are trying to scan and to see what's different. We know something, we know that, but it's a lot about the amygdala, but we don't know exactly how all of this works and how really it is the life experience of a person with that low or absent emotional regulation and empathy.
Should we do the washing machine of woes?
Yeah, let's go.
Every week I put an ADHD woe into this machine and I read it out to see if there's some advice and relatability from the guest. And this week in the washing machine of woes, during COVID lockdown, I grew so bored that I turned to alcohol and spiraled into a depression. At some points, I wanted to take my own life. But since things have returned to normal, those darker thoughts have lifted. Do you think I should still seek help? Or was this just a circumstantial depression caused by a lack of stimulation?
Okay. And this person, and this is the only thing we know, so we don't know if this person has got ADHD as well as depression.
I think it's coming. I think we can probably assume that they probably do, coming from the community.
Okay.
But it doesn't say it. So, yeah, I would assume yes.
Yes. COVID was a very difficult time for, I think, for all of us, myself included. Things have been hard, and probably many people have suffered either what we call an adjustment disorder, which is basically similar to depression, a little bit less serious, but very, very situational to the problem. But other people also suffered from depression afterwards when the stress of the adrenaline basically ceased to be there. First of all, I think that it's a very personal choice whether you feel about seeking help or not. But if you have the doubt, maybe that suggests to me that there are some things that you may, that have remained probably unexplained or you are unsure of. And I cannot see any reason why not to explore this in therapy. I'm not necessarily suggesting that there needs to be a pharmacological treatment for something that was there in the past and is not creating any problem nowadays. Obviously, I'm not saying that COVID is going to happen again and we are going to get bored and we are going to live in the same way. But trying to explore what happened and why possibly boredom affected you so badly Actually, probably it could be something important to do because we want to think and receive treatment not only when we are in the very lower bottom, but when we are a little bit better, to be able to actually work on prevention strategies and how not to end up being so unwell again, and improving our strategies, coping strategies. So, for example, probably alcohol was not necessarily, which is something that many people have done. It's a normal coping mechanism, but maybe not the most functional one. And it could be good to discuss with a therapist a little bit more in depth.
As well as alcohol, do you think crime can be a means to occupy a bored mind?
I wouldn't consider that the mechanism is as simple as, oh, I'm bored, I want to do crime. I think you end up doing crime in a less direct way. So for example, you start doing things that are more and more risky. Could be, for example, investments or some businesses that are, you know, can carry some sort of risk for yourself and other people. Or again, we were discussing earlier, speeding with a car or assaulting someone that comes out of impulsivity. So all of this is, yes, I'm bored and I'm reacting to something, but it's not that I want to, it's not that linear that I go into crime. Plus, getting into crime is often also not justifiable only from by the ADHD symptoms themselves. There is always something more. Previous trauma has always been is an important aspect to consider, that not everybody that has got ADHD, even serious ADHD, are going to get into trauma. And substance misuse and alcohol, obviously, they are a big predictor of violence and involvement with the criminal justice system as well.
Mm. Fascinating. I'm thinking about your ADHD item now. And I ask all my guests to tell me an item that most represents ADHD in their life or for you. And you said a clock.
Yes.
And I think people will know where we're going with this, but you explain why you chose a clock.
It's because these are kind of paranormal relationship with time. People with ADHD have a very complicated relationship with time, where time can be at the same time so slow because everything is so boring and just never, you never get done with something that is so boring and it lasts, a second could last for hours. But also so fast when you're getting ready. It's just just this inability to prioritize one task and finish that task and at the time that you are expected to finish and to be on time for a certain appointment. Mm. And also this, I don't know if it is about underestimating the task length or overestimating your ability to be quick with a task. But this thing of people with ADHD, if they know that they have 2 hours between now and the appointment, in those 2 hours, even if they are ready, they're not going to get ready. They're going to start doing hundreds of things and they're going to manage to get late because they may be overestimating themselves, maybe, I don't know. But yes, it's time. I think it's a big, big one. You were just discussing earlier about the clothes in the washing machine. Also, you remember that we were just discussing that some people forget clothes. And that's, again, I think it could be also that related to the time, isn't it? Because you just forget about the passing time of the program that is there, which probably would alert most of the non-neurodivergent people, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. I've started reframing 5 minutes as 300 seconds. Because if you say you've got 5 minutes, you think you've got enough time to have a shower, get ready, brush your teeth. But in reality, you definitely never do. But 300 seconds makes it seem a lot more urgent.
Yes.
That's a good little hack.
That's a good one.
Thank you so much, Alex. This has been really fascinating.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.